Tonight, we're going to get a little bit of apologetics. Why is that important? I'm sure Michelle could tell you a whole lot more eloquently than I can, but I think of it this way. You have faith. You have beliefs that you've been holding on to and maybe have developed over many, many years. A lot of people know what they believe, but do you know why you believe it? I mean, if it's because Pastor Ben said it, that's not really going to make it. If it's because that's just the way I was raised, that's not really going to make it either. And I tell you, for me, my biggest concern is for our young people. You know, I've often said, and I'll probably continue to say it until I'm not here anymore, but I'm very concerned about young people who are raised in the church. Because they grow up in a Christian environment, they grow up in a good home, they know all the lingo, they know what to say, they know what they're supposed to believe, and oftentimes after they go away from home, they fall apart. They walk away. They hear other things that interest them in some form or fashion, and because they haven't really rooted themselves in their faith beyond just hearsay, let's put it that way, beyond hearsay, it doesn't hold up when they get into the world and are challenged in what they think and what they know and what they believe. And so, parents, I just encourage you, don't just, you know, rely on youth group and the children's ministry to impart to your young people faith and belief and understanding. That's really on you. And you know, one of the great things about apologetics and what Michelle is going to share with us tonight and in the future is that you can then impart this to your young people. Amen? I didn't mean to go that way, but would you welcome for tonight Dr. Godmere, our resident apologetist.
Wow, that's quite an intro, especially since there's only about 3,000 apologists in that actually call themselves apologists in the U.S., and then when you take how many churches that is, and then when you take that only about 1 to 5% of those are women, J. Warner Wallace actually said there needs to be an apologist in every church. And, you know, a lot of times they think, well, that's going to be the pastor. And, you know, it's not the same role. Bill will even tell you, it's not. So what we'd like to do tonight, if you want to put up that first slide, we want to get you guys to actually ask some questions. How this would actually work, I don't like lecturing in apologetics. I'd rather go Socratic, and when you have questions, I ask you. I know, that sounds real fair. But one thing that I will tell you tonight, it's all in English. And only this church can laugh about that. Okay, so I wanted to start a series asking the right questions because intelligent questions deserve intelligent answers. You can't just tell your kids, I don't know, or just believe. They're going to say, why? My son, he was one of the best apologists when he was before a year old because his first word was this, that, this, this, that, this. And then he wanted to know what it was, and then he wanted to know why it was. And my husband will tell you that he'd say, okay, Sean, you know how this game works. You're limited to 100 questions a day, and once you reach 100, you're done till tomorrow. He meant it, too. And Sean's like, uh-huh. But Anyway, so who is God and why can't I see it? When I showed this slide to my son, he said, I get what you did there. You called God an it. I know where you're going with this. If you want to put up that next slide, who thinks that's a straightforward statement? I believe in God. You do? Okay. Rachel, which God? Being who? Being what? Being they? It? God is an it? There's no gender. Right? Oh, okay. So is this a personal or an impersonal God? You sure? How do you know? Okay, so is God a concept? So you're saying God is not a concept, God is some sort of a being? Okay. With what characteristics? No, I'm not letting her off the hook. I had to put up with this in my doctorate classes all the time. So I know what she's going through. Okay. So, well, you want me to pick on someone else. Okay, so characteristics, actions. Where is your God heading? Is your God heading anywhere? You know, what are we really talking about? See, we have about 80% of Americans, I mean, that statistic varies within a couple of points, but around 80% say they believe, oh yeah, there's a God, okay. Of those 80%, about 30% of them say, oh, well, how do you define what I mean by God? It's just bigger than I am. Or different than I am. See, it doesn't even have to be a higher power. It can just be a simply different power. And we don't know if that power, that other power, is higher or lower in rank. Could be lower. Our religion, we believe that you can put God inside of a container and tell it what you want, and it will imbibe the characteristics you're looking for on your command. So it's actually lower than you, which, how can that be God? But, so, are we saying that it's a force? Does it still manipulate time, space, this world? Or did God just get on a giant Greyhound bus and pssst? Okay. Now, you think this gets complicated? Wait till you hear this. Do you know that about a quarter of mainline Protestants and Catholics say, yes, I believe in God, but not the one of the Bible? Because the one of the Bible is, well, the one of the Bible is a concept. The one of the Bible is meant to instill certain feelings that you should have toward your fellow man. So there's some sort of a mystical something out there, but literal God of the Bible, no, because the Bible should not be. And they even teach that in seminaries nowadays. So you got to really, if you're going to send your kids to a Bible college, ask some really pointed questions on to what extent they believe in the inerrancy and legitimacy of the Bible as we have it? Or do they have to tweak it to make it fit our norms? Okay? So, could you put up the next slide? Okay. So, is God visible and inaudible? Do you believe that God is actually standing here in the room? And you believe that because the Bible tells you that he is. Well, then you're left with this great argument that can happen. And so then the question comes up, okay, well, I sure don't see or hear another being of sorts. Doesn't look like another person, so why do you believe that these statements can even be answered? So you need to be able to clearly and coherently come up with answers. See, what got me started with apologetics was right after I got saved, and I had so many questions and no one had an answer for me, so I had to look them up myself. So I spent hours pouring into the Bible, pouring into atlases and historical finds with archaeology and histories and socioeconomic studies and languages and all different kinds of hard and soft sciences. I even use math, which is sick. But I wanted to have, if I had a question, if God is really real, there will be an answer. And so I spent so much time pouring into that so that in ninth grade, I'd only been saved for a year, I had a debate with my science teacher and I beat him. And that really made him mad because it was during class. But, I realized that, you know, well, gee, I need to study more and more and more and more and more and more. And the more I got into studying, the more I got into science, and the more I found that the two actually do this. The science got easier because of my faith. My faith got stronger through the science. So, clearly and coherently, just like 1 Peter 3:15, giving a good reason for your belief. So, when Pastor Bill approached me on this subject, he says, what's the nice, gentle, easy way to introduce people to this? And I said, well, evidentiary apologetics is probably not that, which is what I am. The classical apologists, that might be a little much to take in first time, too. So we're going to go the simplest route, the presuppositional, which means we're going to use the Bible. And we're going to have the Bible actually help teach us who is God. Okay? So what we want to do tonight, we want to say, is the Christian worldview consistent or contradictory to what we witness in the natural world? We have a natural world, and scientists love to use the natural world. And then they try to make assumptions and make bold leaps as to what that actually can tell you. So we're going to start out with a really great statement that a lot of these bright guys like to use. I love the brightest of the scientists, because when I hear or see their arguments presented, my actual dissertation was, if I were actually to debate the five greatest atheists out there, what would I actually use? You know, but I digress. Okay, so we're gonna start with something that these guys in science and philosophy love to toss out to audiences, especially to college students. Next slide. Nature itself may be thought of as a creative being. Naturalism claims that life on Earth arose from natural substances by natural selection for natural ends. Two of the biggest atheists right now have actually used this statement in their papers. And I look at that and I said, So nature itself may be thought of as a creative being, so did it create itself? Well, how can something that's natural, which means it has physical properties, how does it create itself? If it's going to create itself, it's got to do it from nothing. Well, how do you get nothing and get a physical substance? If anybody else has any ideas on that one, please, you know, help me out here. Oh, yeah. The guy that I actually led to the Lord was my advanced biochemistry professor at Wayne State University. And he told me that an RNA molecule was sentient, that it had imagination, and it was suffering a crisis in the middle of a swamp. It was depressed. Okay? This is a molecule. And said, you realize there's so many other things that I could do if I could be more than what I am? If there was a way that I could increase in complexity, I could actually solve that problem and create for myself a brand new identity and a brand new vision and a brand new purpose. And it looked across the swamp, searching for an answer, because it could see. Okay, see, that was the reaction that I had in class. I'm looking around the room, and 79 other people are furiously writing this down. So it saw at the edge of the swamp, right where the land hits, a bubble. So if I make my trajectory just right, I don't want to swim too fast because it'll pop. I don't want to swim too slow. I'll bounce right off. I got to make the calculations and make sure that I can swim, you know, kick with the flippers, and go and penetrate the bubble. And did perfectly. And now it's my own space. My own space that I can do whatever I want in here. I'm protected from the outside. And I can think without any distraction. What do? Make a copy of myself, of course, because I'm just that brilliant. So makes a copy of itself and calls it DNA and says, you know what? If I'm going to have purpose, that means I got to have other parts. I gotta have other objects that can manipulate things like energy and such. So, I gotta find a way to make proteins. And it makes a bunch of proteins. And those proteins come together and they make different organelles. And those organelles come together and makes a whole system. and it comes up with 17 different cascades of how you can actually pump a toxin out of a cell, whether it be from a bacteria, a virus, or a chemical. And voila! Worked! Oh, this is great! I just bust out laughing. And the guy says, you know, he's looking that way, and I'm over here, and he just, pew, right at me. And he says, so, you think all of this is wrong? I'm like, heh, yeah. So, all of this? And I said, yep. You got a better idea? Yeah, one that takes less faith. That started a nasty road all sinister until the very end, but I'll share that at the end. So, so you've got nature that creates itself. There are scientists that will actually go along with that. And they, when you ask them how, they say, quantum vacuum, and then you say, which is what? And they say, I don't know. And then you ask, well then, how? What can we use to find out? And they say, can't, because it was too long ago. There's no way really to know. Oh, so it created itself because you can't think of any other possible explanation. Yeah. Ew. Okay. So, if it created itself, nature is a physical material, yes? Okay. Has a physical material ever, always, ever existed? No, can't. Physical materials break down. Okay? So, nature, in order for this to work, nature would have to work outside of time because it can't be dependent upon breakdown. It has to be changeless. It has to be timeless. Well, that doesn't work on our observations on planet Earth. So we're talking about a timeless, changeless mass of physical substance that has vision, character, and the power to do, huh? For a natural end, what does that mean? So it creates itself so it can kill itself? Well, that's a bummer. What a waste. You know? So, is there another, and I've even asked this, is there a natural end besides death? No. No? There's not. So, isn't all of this just a wasted exercise? To me, it is. I mean, that's what I read with that. So, would you say that that statement by itself, with what it claims, is that consistent or contradictory to what we witness in the natural world? Contradictory. Okay. You guys are already smarter than these PhDs that come up with this. All right? This is what you do. You find the flaws in the argument, and then you just kind of break it apart and say, that doesn't make any sense. Okay? So, and I've got an attitude problem. I can do this all day. So, so let's try the Christian view. And let's just see if we can make the same test, put it through the same rigor, and find out if that's consistent or contradictory to what we witness in the natural world. Okay. So, what do you know from Genesis 1:1? What does that say? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Okay, so we have a beginning of the universe. It didn't create itself. Okay, so what kind of nature would this God have to be in order to be able to create physical? It would mean he'd have to be spirit, right? From John 4:24, we know that, okay? So that means if God is spirit, then that means he's timeless and outside of the physical realm. He can't be contained in something that we could make. Put God in a box. Okay? So, and we know that God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate day from the night. Let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. Genesis 1:14. So, because he calls in the sun, the moon, the stars into existence, we earthlings can come up with a way to measure time. We didn't invent that process. The process showed up and we could measure that. Okay? So, by faith, we understand that the worlds were created, beautifully coordinated, and now exist at God's command. So, the things that we see did not develop out of mere matter. That's actually the contradiction to that very statement. Hebrews 11:3. Okay? So the universe comes from something, and it comes from something that's a being, and that being is not made from pre-existing matter. Unlike the special RNA molecule with flippers. Okay. All right. So God had a vision. The universe has some sort of specialness to it. And in the next talk, I will actually reveal the specialness. And it comes with a sick, twisted mind that actually went on to an online program that was made by students at UCLA that said, what would happen if you manipulated different constants that run the universe? And I was blowing the universe up ad nauseum. It was fun. But anyway, so everyone who is named by my name and whom I have made by my glory, for my glory, who has been formed and designed by me. That's Isaiah 43:7. So God says, you know, you want to know why there's a universe? Because I wanted one. I wanted to display my handiwork, my imagination, my depth of feeling. The greatest artist, architect, engineer, scientist, father. Okay? So, God creates humans in his image. In the image of God, he created them. He created them male and female. Okay, so we got the God part from 127, that God is a he, not a she, not a they, not an it. All right. Now, we're saying that man is the end goal to this plan. Okay? And so that means we're achieving the vision of God. Okay? What kind of attributes... And this is using the science. This is using the logic. This is using evidence that you can pull out. If we're the end goal, then that means that the attributes of us would be the closest to the attributes of the one who originated the whole thing. So, we would have to exhibit and display the most characteristics of God, which are what? As witnessed in man. What makes you unique amongst all of the critters? Okay. I'll even take it one step further than that. When you say creative, does that mean that a human being can create a machine that allows that person to see something that they can't see with their normal eyes, that they could create a machine where they could hear something that their normal ears could not detect, that they could create something because they have an abstract concept in their heads. That's exactly what she said. That's the... And what else? Okay, the abstract concept, love, freedom, those kinds of things. That's not something that, you know, the average creature can actually articulate. I'll take it one step further than that. Can the other creatures write it down so someone else could read it? Okay. What else? Okay. So, and that is something that can be chosen. It doesn't, it's not that you're on a fixed path for that. That is something that can be chosen, and you can say, nope, not gonna. Okay. So, okay. There is a sense of morality that you can see in birds, that you can see in other primates. But I think where you're going with this is they tend to have more of a black and white, it's right or it's wrong. It's man that tends to go in various shades of gray. So, what else? Mm-hmm. The eternal and not the empirical. And along that line, we can then do evaluations of what we need to do to get from one destiny or to another. Perfect. We can create purposefully a relational, a societal bond that is conducive to a family, conducive to a marriage, conducive to raising kids well. That investment in family. There is such a thing as investment in lower animals, but it tends to just be make sure the kids get born and then make sure that little bird doesn't fall out of the nest too soon and go splat. Okay. So we can inspire each other. Inspiration is not something that you see in the lower animals. Okay. So, we have all of these unique characteristics. They had to have come from somewhere. And when you talk to these scientists, they say, every characteristic only comes from one reason and one reason only, a survival instinct. And they will go so far as to say, but only for your personal survival. Who cares about the rest? And that bothers guys like Richard Dawkins, because he sees this kind of thing all the time of, why in the world would a human invest so much into somebody, especially a stranger, that they don't even know? Why should they care? Drives him crazy. It's one of the reasons why he actually has been checking out churches to find out, well, what kind of programming did these people get in order to care for somebody that's not of them? Doesn't make sense. It's not logical. Okay? So, we've got these characteristics from somewhere. If it's not directly helping us live another second longer, then it has to serve some other greater purpose. So, these characteristics, so this is what we find unique in us. Can we then say that our God, same thing? So, we can dream. Now, the lower animals do too, but it looks like it's just simply a mimic of their own experience. It's not something that they can use to, say, inspire an idea. Okay? So, we have a God. If you could move to the next slide. We have a God that is so keen on using dreams. Okay? So this is from Job. Nevertheless, in one or two manners, God speaks to the one who does not see. In a dream, in a vision of the night, when deep sleep falls upon men, in slumberings upon the bed, then he opens the ears of men and seals their instruction. So this is a God who shares wisdom through a dream and uses visions and can include an abstract symbol. Oh, so that's where the abstract symbol came from. That's where the dreams, the visions, speaking to us through those. Oh. We have a God who prompts. I myself have stirred Cyrus to action to fulfill my purpose and put things right. I will straighten out every road that he travels. He will rebuild my city, Jerusalem, and set my captive people free. No one has hired him or bribed him to do this. The Lord Almighty has spoken. That's Isaiah 45:13. We have God that directs a king that is not part of Israel. This is not even a king that would call himself a believer in Yahweh. And here he's being stirred to plead the cause of the oppressed and manifest righteousness, truth, and goodness. Because he's the guy that allows the people, the Hebrew people, by my new decree that I just signed today, everyone that is of my lands, whether you are an exilee or not, you can go ahead and whatever may have happened to your house of worship or your practices, your festivals, your feasts, whatever it was that you did, I hereby give you permission to go ahead and reestablish. If you need to do any building projects, go ahead. Okay? So, we have a God who predestines. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us with all spiritual blessings in heavenly things. There's that eternal. In Christ, according as he has chosen us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blemish before him in charity, having marked out beforehand the way for us to be adopted as sons by Jesus Christ in himself, according to the good pleasure of his will. Ephesians 1. Okay. So we have a God that has a free, fixed, and unalterable purpose to call. It's what he said he was going to do. I am calling. I am bringing my people back to me. I'm bringing back my believers. I'm bringing back my children. There's something that I want them to do. There's a call on each of your lives. You didn't create it. He created it in you. He gave you an intentional and unique set of circumstances, gifts, talents, education, situations, all of that came to a head for a calling. So, and we have a God who judges. Then you shall hear in heaven your dwelling place and shall forgive and shall act and shall give to each according to all his ways, whose heart you know, for you have known, you alone, the heart of all the sons of Adam. That's the passage in 1 Kings. God knows the desire and discerns the intent of every one of your hearts. He cherishes man. Psalm 36, 7. God devises man to perform specific tasks, and those tasks are designed to strengthen marriages, strengthen families, strengthen friendships. You read that in Micah 6, 8, Titus 2, 11 through 14, Matthew 22, 36 through 40. And about the ability to read and write, love, God wrote an amazing letter meant for you to read. 2 Timothy 3, 16 through 17. We don't have a God that created a religious system. We have a God that initiates and then maintains a connection with man. One that involves a physical as well as an emotional intimacy. Now, based on what we came up with and what scriptures we just looked at, would you say that that view of God would be consistent or contradictory to what we see in the natural world because we see it in us? Yeah. Now, back to my story that I started. This poor guy, I drove him batty because, you know, was just so certain that his view was right. And he just picked on me all semester long. He would call me down to his desk and say, are you disrupting my class? And, you know, he ended up writing a test of, you know, how did the world begin? And so with the attitude problem, I went ahead and took two sides of a sheet of paper. On one side, I said, your view, and I drew a little RNA molecule, and I put little swim fins on them, gave them a little kick, and then, you know, put some waves in the water and little swim goggles so that, you know, he wouldn't hurt his eyes. And, you know, so I went through that. And then I turned it over and I said, and the truth. I know, I'm attitude. So, and I went through, you know, the biblical account. And as time progressed, and I'm making this man just all kinds of befuddled, by the time it was time to come up with the grade, what he did is he gave us all a unique number and then posted a list of the numbers and then the grades right outside his office. And I look at it, and I said, he gave me an A-. He didn't like that test answer that I gave. He kind of gave me a bad grade on that. When you add that grade with all the other grades, I should have gotten a B+. He gave me an A-. What's with that? And I prayed on it. And I said, I think this is a test. I think this is a test of my character. I think this is a test to see if I'm really the stuff that I say I am. Okay, Lord, I'll do it. I'll do that. You want me to step through that hoop? I'll do it. So I knock on his door, and he opens it up, and I said, you have a problem. He's like, not you. Yeah, we have a problem because I looked at the grade, and I calculated it myself, and I have a B+ by my count, and you gave me an A-. And he says, oh, are you telling me that you want me to lower your grade? And I said, nope. I just want truth demonstrated. And truth is the lower grade. And because I don't answer to you, I don't answer to me. I answer to my God, my creator, my savior, my counselor, and my God is telling me, this isn't the truth. You got to change it. At that very moment, an eyeglass screw fell out of his eyeglasses, and that screw landed in oblivion because this man's office, if you actually set off a bomb, it would probably help. That eyeglass screw is still missing today, I guarantee it. So, was not going to find it, and I caught the lens as it fell out of his eyeglass. And he's like, what am I going to do now? I said, this is providence, because I happen to have with me an eyeglass repair kit. And I am certain I have the exact match of that screw for your eyeglasses. And I'm fixing it. I grab his glasses and I pull it out. Would you know it was exact match? And here I am, I'm, you know, fixing his glasses. And I said, you were saying, Professor, I'm listening. And he couldn't take it. He just couldn't take it. And he's just shaking his head, and he's looking down at the floor, and he said, you're saving me twice. And I said, twice? He says, yeah. You've got my ability to see right in your hands. And after everything that I have put you through and everything that I have said about you, and yet you're still fixing my eyeglasses. You are, and I'll be able to see. That's twice. You know what the first one is? What you've been trying to tell me all semester long, now I want to hear it. All of it. Okay. about Jesus? He's the one that caught the lens. And he just starts to break down, and we pray. He got saved right there in his office. And he gave me his personal email, and we wrote each other. Oh, at first it was every day, and then it was every few days, and that was once a week. But we would send prayers back and forth, scriptures back and forth. He got himself a Bible, and he said, you know, I will never forget you. Is that good or bad? I'm not sure. But so, you know, and but after like a year passed, I just stopped hearing from him. Why? I don't know. Did he pass on? I don't know. Doesn't matter, because I know where he will end up if he's not there already. So you guys have within yourselves to reach out to anyone, your kids, your coworkers, your friends, who is God, because they may very well have an opinion of who that is or what that is. Take that time to reason that out. Find out their story. Find out what that is. If anybody has any questions, I'm free. Otherwise, we can just kind of wrap this up. But anything from anybody? No? See, I told you it was all going to be in English. Well, thank you very much for listening. And if this is something, if you want more of discussions like this, I can't promise I won't call you out on the carpet like I did tonight. But but I can promise you'll learn something. We'll have that reasoning time together, and it'll strengthen your faith. It'll strengthen your witness. It'll strengthen your delving into the Word. It'll prop up questions in your mind, and you'll know there's an answer. There is an answer, and I can find it. It may take me a magnifying glass, a pickaxe, and that crazy broad at Visible, but I can find it. And God will show me. So, thank you guys. Isn't it?